Coming up in This Week in Computer Hardware, a mini STX build, Intel shipping Optane memory modules and opening a new fab, a silent 1050 Ti, and a better way to control the lights in your house because voice control sucks. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twitch audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 401, recorded February 9th, 2017. Voice control sucks.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by 23andMe, a personalized genetic service based on your 23 pairs of chromosomes found in your DNA. For Valentine's Day this year, give that special person the gift of knowledge. Go to 23andMe.com and get $20 off when you buy before Valentine's Day. And by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twit's weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, and less, ladies and gentlemen, the most delightful news about PC, desktop, mobile, phone, server, data, SSD, mobile, server, PC, desktop, you know. We talk about hardware because it's what we love. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by Mr. Ryan Schrouts.
Hello, hello.
Does not repeat himself as fervently as I do.
that you know of.
Interesting week this week. I mean, a lot of stuff going on. We'll talk about Intel opening a new fab in Arizona again. They apparently like to do that every 5 years or so in a cycle, 5 or 6 years. Some trouble in Oculus Rift land, possibly, or maybe 3D... VR sales in general. But let's start with some exciting hands-on news. You guys did a mini STX build with the ECH H1110S-2V and the Silverstone VT01. You actually built a PC smaller than the one I'm running on my desktop at home. Or was this a pre-built box?
No, this is not a pre-built. This is the motherboards from ECS, the chassis from Silverstone, the CPU coolers from Silverstone. And I think we saw another motherboard announced this week in this form factor. I had never really heard of this form factor before, Mini STX, which is interesting. If you look at the image on the video version, you can see on the left is the Mini STX, and on the right is the Mini ITX, which looks absolutely enormous by comparison.
I think absolutely enormous is a little excessive.
It's all relative.
It's, you know, an inch, 2 or 3 centimeters at most.
Yeah. It's an interesting form factor. I believe it is the smallest socketed form factor that exists, the smallest form factor where you can choose which processor you put in it, that type of thing. And it's got like interesting characteristics. It has to use SODIMMs instead of regular memory modules. It does not have a PCI Express slot. The I/O configuration is actually partially on the left and partially on the right. It's not all in one section because of limitations of size, for example. And then, you know, the chassis. It's the case. If we look at the motherboard, it is it's an H110 motherboard, so it supports everything up through Skylake. And I don't think this particular board supports Kaby Lake, but you could see some boards if they integrate the right stuff and update their BIOS for it would be able to support Kaby Lake. Dual channel DDR4. You know, you've got a slot for an M.2 slot for an SSD, as well as a slot for Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. Mini PCIe type of thing. One normal SATA connection for a typical hard drive if your case or whatever tries to do that. USB 3, you know, right. HDMI DisplayPort, Gigabit Ethernet. A pretty full functioning system for $79 on that motherboard.
No, $79 for the motherboard. Then you have to buy the processor. Unlike my desktop at home, this does not have the option for adding a discrete graphics or a standalone graphics card. And it's funny because it fits the Mini STX form factor fits right in between Nano ITX and Mini ITX. I mean, it's 147 millimeters by 140 millimeters, and I want to say Mini ITX is right around like 150 millimeters or I want to say 150 by 150, 5.9 by 5.9 inches. So it's not a lot smaller, which I find a little strange. You'd think it would be much, much closer to the Nano ITX size. That might just be me dreaming of smaller and smaller computers. The performance,
I mean, the performance is good, right? Like, I mean, you look at the case itself from Silverstone is $30. The cooler is $20. And you know, as you look at the second page and you look at kind of the build process, you know, it's basically like any system, except you've got smaller looking memory modules and no add-in capabilities for discrete graphics, at least on this motherboard. The overall performance, as you mentioned, is surprisingly good. Here's the secret though. Sebastian didn't get the memo that this was supposed to be limited to a 65 watt CPU. And so he used a processor that was actually a 90 watt TDP CPU.
Really?
Yeah. And had no issues, like ran through benchmarking and loading it down with Prime 95 and testing cooler capability and all that stuff. And really came back with no problems on stability or capability or processor downclocking or anything like that. So that's a good sign for both the case and for the cooler, that it was able to handle it. And the motherboard was able to handle it as well. It does require external power. That's something worth noting. It is not, there's no internal power supply. You have to get a power brick, like a laptop type of deal, which really isn't that big of a concern, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, you basically, he got a Core i7 or Core i5 6600K, you know, quad core non-hyper-threaded CPU to run full bore in this. Obviously the integrated graphics are going to be somewhat minimal, so you're limited in that regard. So it depends on what use cases you have for the product itself and what you want to do with this type of small system. But it's definitely going to be, you know, faster than a general like Nook, Intel Nook style machine that you would kind of see in a similar form factor. The Nook's going to be a little bit smaller than this, but close in approximate capacity, I guess. One interesting thing, I don't know if I have a, I don't think there's a link for it in there, but I did see a motherboard announced in the Mini STX form factor that uses MXM modules. So in theory, you could have a discrete graphics card in that solution that uses an MXM module. The difficulty there being finding a reliable source of MXM modules that, you know, if you go on eBay and you go on some of those places and people who are, you know, upgrading their laptops and have old ones or something like that, that might be your best shot. They don't normally sell those at Newegg or Amazon and locations right, like that. So you're probably looking at a new or a refurb option for something that in that realm. But
I was getting a little nervous about buying processors that somebody scraped out of another system. To send around.
Yeah, especially on eBay where there's a lot of, you know, as is type stuff and your return policies are limited, and it would be something to keep an eye on for sure, to keep track of as you look through all of it. So it's still neat to see this type of form factor. I mean it's just looking at the last page and the finished construction, right? How big, yeah, that picture right there, how big the M.2 SSD looks in comparison to the rest of the platform gives you an idea.
I mean, it's a delightfully tiny machine. It looks like it would be great for a home theater PC you weren't doing gaming on. Sebastian said the noise was basically, you know, at or below his threshold with most of the fan settings on that, which he was surprised by, given that it's a pretty simple, pretty tiny 80 millimeter fan. I think he'd like 33.4 decibels. I'm curious. I mean, I'm always delighted to see yet another way to put a PC in a very, very small container. I just wish it had the ability to do external graphics.
I'm obsessed with PCs. I mean, the thing is, there's no reason that form factor couldn't do it if you found a motherboard that integrated something like Thunderbolt 3 on it, right? You would be able to do it. But this particular solution does not support that. And the problem will be you're going to get into more expensive total, costs when you get into motherboards that are going to support that type of thing. And return on investment will be a big variance.
Yeah, and also just that would also mean having a much, much larger enclosure because you need much more space to put a GPU inside of that.
But if you had external graphics, then I don't know. I guess if you've got a small form factor PC, external graphics doesn't really make sense because you have two small boxes as opposed to one medium sized box that actually hold the video card. It's not exactly a laptop solution. Intel, that's one of the things Intel kind of talks about with their Skulltrail Nook is that it has Thunderbolt and you can't connect external graphics to it. I don't know which one of those devices is mobile that you would need to have that, or maybe it's just kind of the space and form factor of it all that makes more sense, but it is an option out there if people have a need for it.
Good to know. NVIDIA Quadro offerings now include GP100 with 16 gigabytes of HBM2. What's the word coming out of SolidWorks world this week?
So this new GPU, the Quadro GP100, is based on a GPU that's kind of like 10 months old at this point in terms of when it was announced. It was announced as the P100. It was announced as a GP100 GPU that found its way into the Tesla P100 product, which existed for high-performance computing, high-end simulations, those types of things. And it was then released a couple of months later as an add-in card, Tesla P100. Again, no display outputs, meant for server infrastructures, meant for, $15,000 to $500,000 workstation or servers and rack mount machines and those types of use cases, I guess. The Quadro variant is unique in that it is now, it's not a consumer-facing product, but is now a prosumer, professional-facing product. It has display outputs, it has connectivity options, but it is still based on that GP100 GPU. So this is the first time that in theory you'd be able to buy one of these cards for, an individual machine, for a workstation that has that GPU in it. And the unique traits of this GPU compared to other Quadro options or GeForce options is that it is the first NVIDIA GPU to have HBM2 memory on it. So it's got 16 gigs of HBM2 memory rated at 716 gigabytes of memory bandwidth. So it's much higher than other products. It is the Radeon Fury X was HBM. We know that Vega is going to have HBM2. This was an HBM2 part that had very, very limited releases last year as it went through those super high-end, high-margin parts in the server and HPC world before kind of coming out now in this Quadro thing. One thing to note is that as you look at the specs on it, compared to the Quadro P6000, which is a Pascal-based part, but GP102, so the same GPU that's in the Titan XP, the Titan X, the new one based on Pascal, the new Quadro GP100 actually has less single precision floating point performance than the Quadro P6000. 10.3 teraflops versus 12 teraflops. However, what that means is, like, in theory, all else being equal, the gaming performance, the graphics performance of the P6000 would actually be higher than the GP100. But if you look at the double precision capabilities, the new GP100, that's where it excels. It's 5.15 teraflops of compute capability versus the Quadro P6000 has 0.375 teraflops of compute capability in that regard. So it's they're very much meant for different application styles and workflows, right? The GP100 is going after, super high-end workstations that are doing advanced simulation or, looking for oil underground, like something that requires double precision compute that most workloads, even professional workloads, don't really demand at this point. And if you look at like the consumer space, we're starting to talk about single precision to half precision migrations, right? Going to 16-bit math instead of 32-bit. This is going the exact opposite direction. So its strength is in double precision compute. So people who have you know, wondered, oh, does this mean that NVIDIA is going to announce a GP100 based part for consumers, you know, HBM2 for a GeForce card? Will that be coming down the line, or a Titan card? And I just don't think that's in the cards at all. No pun intended, I guess. But it's
it doesn't make sense.
It's slower than the other cards out there, and the advantages of the high bandwidth memory are really, you know, limited to specific work sets, unless you have the GPU horsepower that necessitates that type of bandwidth. So it wouldn't make sense. And as a Quadro card, this is probably a $5,000 to $8,000 product. I don't think this is something that, you know, consumers need to worry about at this point. We'll get HBM memory from NVIDIA when we get the Volta line late this year or early next year. I don't really know exactly when it's going to happen now, but still interesting to see the kind of slow proliferation of this part through the high-end markets, right? It's basically right. Gone from the incredibly high margin parts to the moderately high margin parts to just the high margin parts. And that's probably where it will end.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Apparently you were talking about Acer releasing the XR382 CKQ. Or the display, according to the article on PeacePro.com that Jeremy wrote up. 37.5-inch IPS adaptive sync display from Acer. Quad HD refers to a 3840 by 1600, 2300R curve, ultra-wide screen resolution. Quote, making shopping for a monitor even easier, even before you try to type in the model number. Tops out at 75 hertz. Sorry, G-Sync fans, writes Jeremy. If you're not familiar with the R spec that's showing up on these ultra-wide curved monitors, that describes the radius in millimeters that the curve is based on. The smaller the number, the tighter the radius, the tighter the curve. I prefer larger. I will say initially, I certainly prefer larger radius curve monitors, although 2300 is not particularly tight or it doesn't wrap around you quite so much. I will say over time, you adapt, because when you initially go from like a 3400R model to a 1700 or 1800R, the smaller radius will feel like the lines are curved, because they essentially are if you have the monitor tilted off axis. Over time, your brain kind of adapts and you don't really notice it anymore. I don't think you notice it at all when you're playing games and stuff, but it is something to think about when you're looking at options for curved monitors. This one a little out of my price range, but I am about to replace my desktop monitor with a similar model from a different manufacturer that is priced about half as much. Yeah, I don't particularly, I'm not obsessed with adaptive sync at this point.
I don't know if I've seen another 38-inch screen in this form factor, because they call it ultra-wide QHD. Because it's 3840 by 1600. It's been a while since I've seen a 1600 as a vertical resolution in a new display. So I think most of the monitors that I've seen in this form factor are the highest and are 3440 by 1440. This one's a little bit bigger than that, at 3840 by 1600. So I'd like to see it in person to see if it makes any kind of noticeable impact on use case and use space. Because, sure. You know, some people still have concerns over these ultra wides and the amount of vertical space you get when, like, looking at things like web pages. But
it doesn't
particularly
bother me. I find myself working with 1, 2, 3 panels of information across the monitor, and I've never been losing 100 pixels or a couple hundred pixels off the vertical on my monitor has never particularly bothered me. I do know a lot of people, so people that are driven completely insane by that, which I guess I can understand. You know, there are, a lot of the options out there are like 3440 by 1400, which is kind of a straight WQHD.
Right.
There's some options. HP had some really gorgeous widescreen displays, but they don't seem to be available yet on their website. So we'll talk about more about those when they are available. Let's take a moment to thank our friends over at 23andMe. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by 23andMe. If you're looking for a particularly unusual gift for Valentine's Day, Valentine's Day is my nightmare. Valentine's Day shopping usually ends up with me feeling like I really should give up on Valentine's Day. My wife loves it when I say things like that. 23andMe is the online personal genetic service named after the 23 pairs of chromosomes found in your DNA. The perfect Valentine's Day gift for that special someone who wants to know more about their ancestry. It's pretty cool. My friend Robert Heron's done this for a staggering number of people in his family because he's kind of curious. The Ancestry service provides a breakdown of your global ancestry percentages. See how your DNA breaks out across 31 populations worldwide and find out where your ancestors lived more than 500 years ago. You can go further back over thousands of years and trace parts of your ancestry to maternal and paternal haplogroups. Find out how much Neanderthal DNA you inherited. You can even connect with other people who share DNA with you. It's kind of trippy. The Health and Ancestry Service provides an even more comprehensive understanding of your genetics. You'll have access to all the reports available with the Ancestry Service, as well as trait reports and carrier status reports. Wellness reports detail how your DNA relates to caffeine consumption, lactose intolerance, muscle type, and more. 23andMe has more than 1 million genotyped customers worldwide. You will continue to find new relatives as the database grows. Just provide your saliva sample from home and mail it back to the lab in the same kit it came in. It's so easy. With over 65 online genetic reports, your loved one will be sure to fall in love with their genetics and you at 23andMe.com. Go to 23andMe.com today. Buy before Valentine's Day to get $20 off. It's a deal, people. And you can check that whole Valentine's thing off your list. Go to 23andMe.com today. Buy before Valentine's Day to get $20 off. That's 23andMe.com. We want to thank 23andMe for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, my goodness. Intel started shipping Optane memory modules. I'm actually really excited about this.
Yeah, it's
there was a pause there, Ryan, and I was like,
well, so they, I think this particular news is about the memory modules that go into DIMM slots for server designs and not in particular the Optane drives that go into things like laptops. I mean, same technology, sure. Same idea. It's just a different interface and a little bit different logic in how they're implemented. So this was, I think if we go back to like the first Crosspoint demonstrations, this was what they were really referring to. This is what they were kind of like building up for, is that you would, you know, if you're running a server, you're running a super high-end workstation, you would replace or fill some of those empty DIMM slots with Optane memory that then communicates with the processor through that electrical interface, but not as DRAM, right? So the Crosspoint memory itself, the Optane memory, is doing its own translations on the DIMM side to more or less emulate what a DDR module would do in terms of how instructions it receives versus data that it sends back to the processor. And that kind of makes sense, right? Because you remember that the idea of Optane memory is to kind of bridge the gap between local system memory performance and NVMe SSD performance. But they're doing it in one of two ways: either A, through an NVMe interface, a PCI Express interface, or B, through something like this, like the memory modules, the DIMM slots, because there's no other currently available interface for them to attached to. So it's got to be one or the other. So do they adapt Optane to go through an M.2 slot or a PCI Express slot or an NVMe connection, or do they adapt it to go through a DIMM slot? And this is kind of more on the enterprise side that they're going through the DIMM slots. A lot of motherboards and stuff like that, limited to two, maybe four memory modules anyway. Server boards can often have 16 or 24 of those guys. So it depends on what their use cases are. But they are being shipped, and I mean that's good. More of this is better. The more quickly Optane memory proliferates through anything, the better we'll all be in terms of getting adoption accepted universally, sure, whether it be an enterprise or consumer, and stuff like that. And we did see at CES laptops announced that would have Optane memory in them, but none of those are shipping yet still. And I still have not heard of a projected timeline for that shipping, other than I think, March, April time frame, and nobody seemed to be in a super big hurry, which does worry me a little bit that maybe it's not as awesome as we all think or hope it will be.
Well,
in its first iteration.
Speaking of things in second iterations, and we're hoping that they'll be all that they can be, Intel's opening a fab in Arizona. Again, if this sounds familiar, it will produce microprocessors to power data centers and hundreds of millions of smart and connected devices worldwide, which sounds not quite like we missed the mobile part awesomeness, and we have a flat PC market, so we're not going to build this gigantic facility in Arizona that we said we were going to build back in, I want to say, 2011. But they are back at it again, meeting with the president today, basically. They're going to open up this fab and have a whole bunch of jobs, which I think is a positive thing, especially since they planned on opening it, shut it down, or shut down the process of finishing it, and now they are back at it again. So that's good. I mean, more jobs and more American production is always a good thing. $7 billion is going to take is what it's going to take to finish Fab 42. It's going to be using the 7-nanometer manufacturing process. You know, I'm excited. It's going to take 3 to 4 years to build it. But once it's done, Intel claims 3,000 high-tech, high-wage Intel jobs for process engineers, equipment technicians, and facilities support engineers and technicians who will work at the site. So
that's good
this
news.
Is good. Yeah, we like that. We like more jobs, people. It's a good thing. USB-C charging is not quite a mess. If you haven't seen it, PC World has an awesome article Gordon Ma-Ung put together. They plugged in all the USB power supplies they had into all the USB laptops they had, and actually updated with a couple laptops recently. But if you scroll down, you'll see a pile of laptops, a MacBook 12, a Razer Blade Stealth, the HP Spectre X2, Dell XPS 13 2016, and Google Pixel 2015. All of them can charge via Type-C ports using power delivery. And they put together a chart, and if you keep scrolling down, you'll see a big old mess of red and green and yellow.
Yeah.
And just as you might expect, that's the pile of USB-C charging laptops there. Some of them work, some of them don't. So there's a Spectre X2 charger, a MacBook charger, a Pixel charger, which is kind of the winner in terms of compatibility. Razer Blade Stealth charger, Energy's Power Gear, and Huawei's Nexus 6P charger, which was not the winner. Neither was the MacBook charger in terms of compatibility. But if you'll take a look at HP Spectre's 2, that's the column with a whole bunch of red and one green box on the left. And HP basically told PC World that they're very conservative with what they will allow to charge their devices. And I think since it didn't detect an HP Spectre X2 charger, it refused to charge via it. The MacBook worked with everything. The Google Pixel worked with everything. The Dell XPS, which takes a fair amount of juice, wouldn't work with the X2 charger or the MacBook charger. Or the Huawei Nexus 6P charger, but did fine with the Pixel charger, the Stealth charger, and the Energy's PowerGear USB-C 45 charger. And you can see to the right, the Razer Blade Stealth charged slowly with the X2 charger, but worked pretty well with everything but the Huawei Nexus 6P charger. And the Huawei Nexus 6P either charged rapidly or just charged, depending on which power supply you were using. This became a big thing for me because I have to buy another power supply for my XPS 13, and I've been using a USB-C desktop dock from Kensington to charge it lately. And I think I'm going to try this time rolling with a Pixel charger, the 60-watt Pixel charger, and see how that works for me traveling on that, which ironically won't charge the external battery I have for my XPS 13, but will charge the XPS 13 itself and could possibly outlast this laptop and work on the next laptop I buy, which I'm fascinated by the idea of having a
non-proprietary charger.
For my laptop, since I usually end up buying two or three chargers for my laptop. You know, one in my bag, one in my workspace.
Same here. So that was one of the reasons that was one of the primary reasons I stayed with like the same laptop brand and series that I did as long as I did, because I had bought one for my house and two for the office and one for my backpack. So I didn't have to buy four more chargers whenever I went with a new design. So I would agree with you. Like the being able to find this perfected would be fantastic.
It would be. Lots to announce the Brio webcam, 4K and HDR. Not that I know of any services that will stream in 4K or HDR.
True. True.
720p 30, 720p 60, 1080p 30, 1080p 60, and 4K 30 and HDR using Right Light 3, although we don't really know what that'll be actually compatible with.
So it's $199. The HDR is not so much that it's creating an HDR video that will play back on HDR TVs. It's more that it is correcting overblown light in the footage that it's recording, right? Or that it's capturing. And I saw a demonstration of it and it seemed to work pretty well, worked better than their previous generation part. But it is not, this is part of the confusion that will be surrounding the term HDR for quite some time. Maybe they need a different term for it on the camera side, but in reality, cameras have had HDR support, quote unquote, for longer than we've had displays that have had HDR support. So it's an interesting debate. You're right. There's nothing that streams at 4K, but with the benefit you get, so like they're targeting this at businesses and then like high end users, people who are doing YouTube, those types of things. The ability to record locally at 4K, and if you want to upload to YouTube at 4K, you can do that, or you can use digital zoom, but now still get a 1080p image out of it is pretty compelling, right? So if you just want to zoom in on something, or you don't want to have to move the camera around, or you want it needs to be a little bit further away from you than you would like in terms of what the typical lens range would be on a 1080p camera, you can use digital zoom and kind of correct for some of that too. And it's not listed here in the story, but it apparently does support 720p 90. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you want that for, I guess. But it's an option. So there you go.
There you go. $199 yeah. US, $249 Canadian, and it is shipping now. So interesting concept that.
Yep.
The palette has a new fanless GeForce GTX 1050 Ti, which to me sounds amazing for a home theater PC or a 1080p gaming PC where you just don't want to hear any noise. Do we have any information on this point on what performance is going to be like, or should it pretty much, okay, specs are identical to a 1050 Ti, so hopefully the performance will be identical to a 1050 Ti.
It should be. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, unfortunately, we don't have any information on pricing or when it's going to ship yet.
No. And Palette, I believe, doesn't directly sell into the North America market anymore, which is disappointing. I did email them and ask for one of these cards, so we'll see if they actually send it. But I am with you. I think the idea of a completely passively cooled 1050 Ti high performance video card is pretty awesome, right? As somebody who has a TV sitting next to me that we were building home theater PCs for, using a water cooled GTX 1080 and a water cooled 7700K, the idea of getting more silent parts in there is really interesting. I am curious to see, you know, how the GPU would perform in relation to what the thermal environments of the case happen to be, mm-hmm. right? Like how dependent on airflow through the chassis is this cooler to get all 75 watts of the power out of that GPU? Because that's something that you have to be a little bit more concerned with when you go with passive devices. But yeah, no idea on if it's going to be available here in the US, if you'll have to find it on eBay or Alibaba or something like that. If you actually do need to have one. Yeah, exactly.
Ship it to you.
we haven't seen a whole lot of, I think AMD has an RX 460 that is passive, but the RX 460 is going to be a significantly lower performer than the GTX 1050 Ti. So it's been a while since we've seen one that's going to be this high performance in theory, but still passively cooled.
Interesting. Take a moment to thank our friends at Grasshopper. This episode is brought to you by Grasshopper, a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. With their iOS and Android apps, callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. And when you make a call, your client sees your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. Simply select toll-free or local number, record a custom greeting, and add multiple extensions for your business. It's so easy. And toll numbers, they are great for marketing. They make your business sound more professional. Set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can even send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. Do yourself a favor. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month, and you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's good stuff, people. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we want to thank Grasshopper for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, man. The rumors are starting to get serious around the iPhone 8. The big one is that this year's iPhone is expected to get wireless charging. It's a Computer World write-up by Lucas Marion. OLED display and a new 3D touch feature, which essentially means you can poke harder and harder and then sort of manipulate and choose menu options on there. This is Ming-Chi Kuo, a financial analyst for KGI Securities, wrote this one up. So... I'm just briefly mentioning
How many of those features do you need to have?
The OLED display might be nice, but the display on my iPhone 6 is actually nice. So excited. I finally got my display replaced, so I have no cracks in my display.
That's good. That's good.
I need to tweet to a bunch of people who were just absolutely horrified at CES at the condition of my display, but I've armored it with a MagPul case and a... tempered glass screen protector. So far,
see how kid-proof it happens to be.
It's not the kids that are a problem. See, I just dropped it again.
Fair enough.
Children are not the issue. You know, 4.7, 5.5 inch, and 5.8 inch form factors are expected to be released this year. My concern is that they are going to go with an actually thinner case when they go with the wall-to-wall option on the screen. I think they're going to, you know, that's the big rumor. They're going to eliminate the bezels, the kind of end-cappy feeling, which would, from a design aesthetic, would look gorgeous. But I'm a little terrified with how likely a thinner iPhone would be to bend and or otherwise disintegrate on contact with me.
Yeah, so. I agree. I just, when I take my phone out of the case, I feel like it's too thin and it's too slick.
Mm-hmm.
For fear of dropping it and turning it into one of your phone disasters, I guess, over there, one of the screen issues. I don't know. That's not what people are asking for. Nobody's asking for thinner phones, right?
Right.
I don't
Certainly
know.
Not me.
Yeah. Give me a bigger battery and a better camera. And yeah. There you go.
That's much more compelling. Facebook's closing hundreds of its Oculus VR pop-ups and Best Buys after some stores went days without a single demo. That's actually what was reported to Business Insider. Alex Heath wrote this one up for them. But apparently, you know, Oculus VR demo stations are not jammed packed with people lining up. You know, it's not quite a third, but... No, actually larger than a third. Math apparently not being my strong point. 200, not quite half of its Oculus virtual reality demo stations, which makes sense because setting up any type of a custom display or end cap inside of Best Buy usually requires a significant investment.
So, oh, yeah.
Although,
why do you think there would not be a demand to try it out? Is there a stigma associated with VR? Surely it's not like a cleanliness concern, right? Like maybe
who
there
knows?
Should be, but I don't know if that's what people are actually worried about. Is it really that people are that apathetic towards the idea of it?
It's a good question because I'll be honest with you. Having been in Best Buys a couple times in the last couple months, I never actually saw the Oculus VR station. And so my first thought is like maybe people aren't actually able to find it inside of the stores. You know, I will say one of the stores I was in, they were in the process of reconfiguring the store. So I really couldn't find anything and neither could a lot of the employees. But, you know, there are You know, the Oculus spokeswoman, Andrea Schubert, said that this was seasonal changes, which to me means we paid a metric ton of money to have these displays available for
during
demo
Christmas
through the holiday season. And now the holiday season is over. Let's throttle it back. Because something you'll notice in Best Buy is, you know, if you go to a Best Buy that is surrounded by a relatively poor community compared to a Best Buy surrounded by a relatively wealthy community, you will notice that the contents seem to shift to skew higher end or lower end based on the people in the surrounding area that are buying stuff. At least it feels like in my experience.
I agree.
But, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, these are, you know, $600 for the headsets, $200 for the controllers, you know, on top of a fairly significant gaming PC. So it may just be that, you know, people, the early adopters that are going to buy probably have bought, and people are waiting for a compelling reason to upgrade and or a reduction in price. You know, it was interesting because at the same time, Business Insider had an article that said Magic Leap, which is like currently, right, they're the ones that they have the display. You're going to be interacting with amazing, you know, 3D, you know, they're basically computer glasses, right?
Right.
You know, that's much like something we've seen from Microsoft will allow you to overlay computer graphics on the real world, augmented reality. Apparently, there's a big scramble at Magic Leap because the January demo everybody saw was faked. Not faked in the sense that you know, people were intentionally deceiving, but that they had, you know, constructed this demo. You know, Magic Leap's been around in stealth mode for years and years. It's valued at like $4.5 billion, despite the fact that it hasn't, based on the investment, despite the fact that they haven't actually released the product. That's the word from Kiff, the phrase from Kiff Leswick was that the reporter, Business Insider, is that they are scrambling. Which is, whole engineering group is scrambling to produce a working prototype of Magic Leap's glasses, a prototype the company has been calling the PEQ. A person familiar with Leap's development process told Business Insider, and it's going to be presented to the board members as a milestone in the product's development. So, should be exciting.
I want it to be real. I really do.
I don't particularly want to wear a couple of belt packs connected to wires to my glasses.
No, I agreed.
You know, you will need something. You always got to power. The graphics have to be powered by something somewhere. And this looks like it'll dwarf the cost of the Oculus Rift or the Vive VR systems. Because, you know, according to former employees, says Business Insider, it's somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000. Quote, slightly more than a fully loaded iPad Pro, one reporter told Business Insider.
You know, when you put it that way, that doesn't seem that expensive anymore.
No.
Right? And, you put it as like, hey, some people are buying iPads for this much money. Wouldn't you rather have a world life-changing augmented reality experience instead? And I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. Yes, for sure.
I'm not sure a lot of people are buying fully loaded iPad Pros.
Probably not.
But, and that's certainly at the very, very high end of what you would pay for a tablet these days. It's interesting because a conversation I had at CES with a friend of mine at Android Authority, and I've been thinking about lately, is not a lot of activity in the tablet world, especially on the Android side. Not a lot of new products, not a lot of premium products being released there. So maybe the tablet world is chilling off even faster than we thought because everybody's saving up for their Oculus Rift or next generation Oculus Rift, HTC Vive, and or Magic Leap glasses systems. So, oh my goodness. Because the world of home automation or the Internet of Things isn't confusing enough, there are more options for controlling everything in your house. I thought this was really cool. Circuit Breaker at The Verge had this one written up, and it's really cool if you haven't seen it, just from a sort of a visual aesthetic standpoint. If you take a look at that, that's essentially a tablet or a touchscreen that has replaced the light switch on the what looks to be a tile wall in a house.
Okay.
And it's a company called Brilliant, and they... The CEO says, quote, I realized pretty quickly I was going to hate having to use my smartphone all the time in my house. It's just the wrong interaction paradigm. And so they came up with the idea of Brilliant Control. A touchscreen tablet goes in place of a light switch and is supposed to control everything from lights to music to smart ovens and sprinklers and whatever else you can hook it up to, writes
I agree with that mentality that using your phone as a controller for everything is not a great idea. You know, there are, I believe it's the Harmony Hub that allows you to use your smartphone as a remote control for your TV and entertainment center and stuff like that. But there is a fundamental value of having a dedicated device that's kind of always on the coffee table, always on the couch, always, you know, unless you have kids, around that area where it's supposed to be.
Have you seen the Logitech Pop switches?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Those, I mean, I thought it was ridiculous until I started using one. And, you know, the fact that you can do, well, it's like, you know, 1, 2, 3 buttons to control things in a room.
Right.
Or other devices in the room.
What kind of stuff have you set one up as?
Mostly lights. You know, lights in sort of an auto configuration to, I've just like rebuilt all the Harmony Home stuff in my living room after replacing my projector. And I like the idea that you can sort of control a whole bunch of stuff off of a recipe for it. But yeah, they sell $40 each, $99 for a multi-pack, or for the $40 each or $100 for the starter pack, which, you know, basically includes a base station that hooks into Logitech.
Interesting.
System.
Yeah, I remember seeing those launch.
But yeah, no, it's you know, I do not particularly enjoy using my phone to control my television or my audio playback or other devices. Although it's much better, I think, to have the ability to control the heat in the house without actually having to get up out of my bed and walk to the thermostat.
Right. And I love this quote in this story that says, if you want to turn on the lights in a room you're just walking into, voice is terrible. and I would agree with that as well. Like, nothing I want to do less when my wife is falling asleep on the couch to turn off the lights is go, computer, turn off the lights. Mm-hmm. Like that's not a good interaction. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the mentality.
Well, there's
Alexa, turn off everything.
And then Alexa goes to the cloud and the cloud comes back to your house and your house tells the lights to do something that you would normally do by flicking your finger up walking into the bathroom.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I did just trigger my Echo in the room that attempted to try to find something to turn off, by the way. So I'm glad I didn't have a macro for everything to turn off the streaming machine and stuff. So,
well, those will sell for $199. So certainly more expensive than any light switch I have ever considered putting into my house. But I've never considered putting a light switch into my house that had its own touchscreen. So something to think about as we slowly slouch towards the Internet of Things taking over every corner of our lives.
I'd like to see these. That's a pretty steep price to try out, I guess. But
says the man with 30 computer monitors in the room with him.
Well, sure. I didn't have to pay for a lot of those. That's a difference.
That's true.
What did they say when these were going to be available?
Like
when these were shipping?
I don't think they have a hard date for when they are going to ship.
It says late this summer. Yeah.
Yeah. Later.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Not today.
Not now.
They got to work things out. They want to make it. I like the idea that a company's going to finish something before they ship it.
What?
It's a dream. I know.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy dream, but it's a dream. Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for listening to us here on This Week in Computer Hardware. You can find all the older episodes and information on how to subscribe and RSS links on twit.tv/Twitch. You can find Mr. Ryan Shrout at PCPer, and you can find me, Patrick Norton, on techthing.com or avxl.com. And as always, we invite you to tweet at us if you got a hardware question at Patrick Norton or at Ryan Shrout. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
See you next week on Twitch.